a strategy to ease the wealth gap based on race. I'm David Brancaccio. In a speech in Tulsa yesterday, President Biden laid out actions aimed at narrowing the racial wealth gap in America, the emphasis addressing discrimination in access to housing and the value of those assets, Marketplace's Andy Euler reports.
Scott Mills started working at Black Entertainment Television when he was a young man. He's now BET's president. And he says there was a piece of advice that Bob Johnson, founder of the network, gave him when he started. Buy a home.
Home ownership was something that you really understood that was important.
Mills says he bought his first home as soon as he could and sold it for more than twice what he paid. But he says he's more of an outlier in his community.
That absence of that equity, that wealth, creates a profound differential.
Research shows that homes in Black communities are appraised at lower values than comparable properties in white neighborhoods. Some lenders are using computer-generated valuations instead of human appraisers to try to mitigate bias, but Michael Neal at the Urban Institute says computers also erred more in Black neighborhoods.
Whether it's conscious or unconscious, discrimination that might be just in the appraisal process more generally is somehow getting built into these models.
The Biden administration says it will use fair housing laws, regulatory action, and the development of standards to address inequity in home appraisals. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
A Federal Reserve Bank of Boston study found the median or typical net worth of white households in Boston was close to $250,000 versus the typical wealth for Black households, just $8. Employers around the country have been waiting for the following all year. The federal agency that works to keep discrimination out of workplaces has updated its guidelines on whether companies can require employees to get COVID vaccine.
So what this law at the end of the day is saying is employers aren't required to require vaccines, but they are not in violation of equal employment laws if they do require it and ask for proof of some sort.
Eric Feldman is a law professor at the University of Pennsylvania focused on medical ethics and health policy. Now, there are exemptions. Companies have to make accommodations for disability, for pregnancy, and for what the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission calls sincerely held religious beliefs. And special accommodation may be requested for some workers who are fully vaccinated but still want stronger health measures. Also, what about goodies offered only to the vaccinated?
I think the interesting part of the guidance is that it's basically anything goes when it comes to an employer who wants to provide incentives to employees to get vaccinated somewhere else. And if it's a third party, not the employer, the EEOC guidance is suggesting, I think quite clearly, that there is no limit to the kind of incentive that could be provided.
The EEOC does emphasize that vaccine is still not available equally and that some demographic groups have a harder time finding the vaccine, so that company policies need to address this. Let's do the numbers. Not lots of movement on stock indexes at the moment. The AEX index in Amsterdam flat, so is the S&P future here. The Dow future is up 0.1%. Crude oil up 1%, $68.42 a barrel.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
It's been just more than a week since the UK and a host of European countries told airlines not to fly over the airspace of Belarus. Now, Reuters is reporting the EU is preparing a round of sanctions on about a dozen of Belarus aviation officials. This is after that country forced a commercial flight to divert and land in Minsk, where authorities arrested an opposition journalist. For Belarus, the money forfeited when airlines don't fly overhead is significant. My Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Victoria Craig, has that.
Hours into a long flight, there's one thing we all do. Count on the screen in front of us the miles and countries we've passed. Airlines also pay attention to those miles, not to track a plane's progress, but to calculate how much they'll be charged to fly over each country's airspace.
A fee structure is necessary to fund air traffic services in each country. And those fees are referred to as overflight fees.
That's Simon Hockard, Director General of the Civil Air Navigation Services Organization.
Some countries charge a flat fee because the routing over the country very rarely changes and it's much, much simpler to administrate. The US has two different prices. If you fly over the land, they charge about $60 per 100 nautical miles. If you fly over ocean, it drops all the way down to just over $25.
Prices, he said, vary depending on things like the size of the aircraft or distance flown. These overflight fees are a way for countries to cover costs of air traffic control services, but they can also be used as geopolitical bargaining tools, as we've seen in the dispute with Belarus that stopped European flights over the country's airspace. Matthew Happold, a professor of international law at the University of Luxembourg, explains how these kinds of targeted sanctions work.
They are intended to influence behavior. And I think they're an expression of condemnation. In this case, I think with Belarus, it's about as well showing solidarity with the opposition.
Before the flight ban, which European authorities said was enacted for passenger safety, about 400 planes a day passed through Belarusian airspace. That's according to Eurocontrol, which bills and collects air navigation charges on behalf of Belarus and other nations. It says in 2019, it billed more than $100 million in overflight fees for Belarus. That might seem like a lot, but as Professor Happold explained, the economic impact of sanctions preventing those flights is likely limited.
Is it going to have an enormous impact on Belarusian government finances? I suspect that is a hit that they will be willing to take.
So if sticks in the form of cutting off flight fees don't work in Europe's negotiation with Belarus, EU boss Ursula von der Leyen has another tool in her box, a carrot in the form of a $3.6 billion economic support package, but only on the condition Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko leaves power. That is an offer a man known as Europe's last dictator, though, is unlikely to take. In London, I'm the BBC's Victoria Craig for Marketplace.
We're also following the ransomware attack on the world's biggest supplier of meat, JBS. The company says its systems are now coming back online, and there are indications workers at some plants are being called back in today. I'm David Brancaccio, Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.